Let's turn to Daniel chapter 1, verse 1, and really quick retell the historical background to the start of this book. In the year 606, the Babylonian, Assyrian, Egyptian war caused the Babylonians to retreat back home with their king, Nabopolassar, not feeling well physically. They had been defeated temporarily by the strength of the Egyptian army of Necho II. The following spring, very early, 605 BC, Nabopolassar the king sent his son, the crown prince, Nebuchadnezzar, westward to take on those Egyptians again at Carchemish. And this time, Nebuchadnezzar defeated Necho soundly, and the Egyptian army began their retreat southward back to their home territory. And Nebuchadnezzar stayed on top of them all the way until they finally crossed the Brook of Egypt, which is the territorial line between the promised land of the Israeli people and the territory of Egypt itself. When Nebuchadnezzar was done in that area down by Gaza, he turned around and visited the capital city of the Jews, of the Judeans. And because they had been acting as tributaries to the Egyptians, because Necho had appointed their most recent king, Jehoiakim, Nebuchadnezzar decides that they need to become tributary to the Babylonians, and more specifically, the Jewish God, the Israeli God, needs to give up some of his dinnerware to the Babylonian God as good faith items. And so here's how it is presented. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. So that's targeting a springtime of 605 BC for us. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, technically he's crown prince at this moment, but he will very soon be king. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and he besieged it. So he surrounds it and threatens them that if they don't surrender, he will attack. And so verse 2, the Lord, that is, he who is God, gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God. So that is the demand given by Nebuchadnezzar to the Judeans is, you need to give up some of your holy items that I can then take and present to my God back in Babylon. And so this is actually how some of the cups and bowls and platters of the temple of He Who Is end up in possession of the Babylonians. That will become part of a story later in this same book. So he brought them to the land of Shinar, that's just Babylon, to the house of his God. And he placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Now, they are not there to be destroyed. They're not going to be melted down. They are going to be kept as trophy items. Because you basically, in the mind of these people, you wanted to prove that your God was better than their God. And so you would take their God's stuff and decorate your God's place with it. So here we go, verse 3. This is the other thing that happened on that visit. Very, very important to our story. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch. Now, eunuch is the word for an officer or an administrator that serves the king. It is true that the eunuchs had basically given up the possibility of having their own families. That was a way of showing their absolute commitment to their lord. But the bigger point is, this guy's in charge of a lot of Nebuchadnezzar's activities. So he told his chief eunuch, Ashpenaz, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace and to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. It was often done by some of these Mesopotamian, upper Middle Eastern kingdoms, that when you took over a kingdom, you would take some of the young people of the higher ranked families back to your own country and educate them in your own language and in your own customs, your own traditions, your own histories, and turn them into the next generation of leadership back in that country, or into advisors to you of how to deal with people from that country. We've actually seen this happen in modern times as well. In particular, I think about how the former Soviet Union, now kind of the Russian Federation and its allies, would very often take young people back to Moscow and have them go through their universities and teach them to be good Russian-minded people. So that's what's happening here. Nebuchadnezzar, who's only about 36, 37 at the time, he says, I want you to get some of their teenagers, the ones that have already shown that they're good in their studies. They've got an aptitude for learning. They've got an aptitude for leading. I want them to be people from the royal family and from the families of the leadership in this country. And I want them also to be strong. I want them to look handsome. I want them to be able to be good additions to my government. That's his goal. I want them to come and be a part of my government when I become king. So this is who he ends up with. Verse number 5. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. And this is also kind of common practice, to show them that they are a valuable part of the future of Babylon and their own country. You give them top-notch rations. You give them the exact same menu items that the king and his people are eating and drinking. And so they were to be educated for 3 years. Now that's 3 calendar years, so it's less than 3 full years, and we'll see that in the timing here. And then at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. So they are going to go through this education period, and once they've finished everything that is in the schedule, they are then going to go and be tested by the king as to which of them, because there's a bunch of them that are selected, as to which of them are going to be then put into the king's court. Now, verse 6, we find out who these guys are. Among these were Daniel, after whom this book is named, because he's the major character throughout it, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. So these three gentlemen, these three young men, they're probably in their mid-teens, they are from high-placed families in the kingdom of Judah. And so they are enrolled in this program, and they are packed up and gotten ready to send off to Babylon. Now, I need to mention here that Nebuchadnezzar has to leave before these guys take off for Babylon. He doesn't get to stick around because a message comes that summer of 605 that Dad has died. Nabopolassar passed away in the middle of July of 605 BC. So Nebuchadnezzar gets on a fast horse and takes off to the north and even cuts across the desert using different horses along the way so that he can keep a nice top speed. And he will be in Babylon at the beginning of the sixth month of the year. So just a matter of just a couple of weeks after he gets word that his father has died. Now behind him, at a slower pace, will be coming these three Judeans. And as they go, they are told that they're going to be given new names that are appropriate to their new stations. Now, this is, again, not that uncommon, that when you go to another country, and you're going to live there for the rest of your life, you take on the characteristics of that country. And we do kind of minor things like this whenever we learn new languages, for example. I know when I took French when I was in high school, one of the first things that happened in class that first day is every last one of us were given French names. If we happened to have a name that was close to a French name, that was what we were given. If we didn't, then we were given something totally new. My teacher thought it was funny to give me the name Jacques short. That was horrible. And that was just ridiculous that they did it. But nonetheless, that does happen. So that's what's happening to these guys. Verse number 7. The chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel, he called Belteshazzar. Now you see the B-E-L at the beginning of that? Bel was the way of referring to Lord in the Upper Middle East, in Mesopotamia. And it was a reference to the chief god of the Babylonians. Hananiah, he called Shadrach, which again has something to do with Babylonian culture. Mishael, he gave him Meshach. So you can see that that's kind of close, but Meshach has a Babylonian sense to it. And Azariah, he called Abednego. Now see that Nego at the end? That is another one of the names for a chief god of the Babylonians. For example, Nebuchadnezzar's name includes Nebo or Nebu at the beginning of it. And that, I believe, is the same god that's represented by Nego here. And so these are the new names, and these are the names that we will see these guys use during the time that they are in Babylon. Verse number 8. They've now arrived in Babylon, and they've been enrolled in the school program, but they've run into a problem. These men have grown up. Like I said, they're only teenagers, but that's still old enough that they've become students of the book in their own right. They didn't have bar mitzvahs back at that time, but something similar where you became old enough that you could read the law for yourself and you became a student and a member of that covenant. And so these guys have kept kosher their lives. They've only eaten certain foods and they've avoided others. Now, there's a lot of bad guys in Judea. We know that Jeremiah is chewing them out and other prophets are also telling them they're doing wrong. But these guys are actually very committed to God. And so Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. So here's his problem. The king's food was inclusive of meat that had not been prepared according to kosher rules and regulations. And the wine may have been a problem for him because he may have taken a Nazirite vow that did not allow him to drink anything alcoholic. So Daniel, as a teenager, has this dilemma that he's supposed to be eating the really good food, according to Babylonian standards, that is given to him by the restaurant of the king, you know, the palace kitchen staff. And it's supposed to be an honor for him to have this, but he can't eat any of it. So he goes to his supervisor, the guy that's overseeing this situation. So he asks the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself, so not to have to go against his own law and conscience. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king, who assigned your food and your drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths or who are your own age? And so then you would endanger my head with the king." So this guy, quite a bit older than Daniel, I'm sure, he says, "Look, I appreciate your dilemma. I understand this is all new to you and that this is making you have to deal with traditions that you've never had to deal with. But you've got to understand my situation. I have been ordered to give you the best that the kitchens can offer. The same food and drink that our king eats and drinks. And his people around him eat and drink. If I were to give you something less than that, and you start looking bad, he'll have my head. Is that what you want? You want to get me in trouble when I've been trying to take good care of you?" Verse number 11. Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink." Now, keep in mind that King Nebuchadnezzar is not going to see them until the third year. And that's what the chief of the eunuchs was concerned about, is if I give you, you know, these 2.5 years of substandard food and you don't look good whenever it comes time for him to interview you, I'll be in trouble because it'll come out that I've been giving you substandard food. So Daniel talks to the immediate helper, the one that actually serves them the food, makes sure that they get fed every day. He says, "Look, what can 10 days do you? Just let us be tested for a 10-day time period, and then you evaluate us." Here's his words. "Test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink." Now, meat is a kosher problem, and even cheese is a kosher problem in modern day times for Jewish people, because they've got to know that the meat has been prepared in a very specific fashion, and the cheese has to be prepared in a very specific fashion, and kept in a very specific place. So they're just not going to mess with meat. They're going to only have fresh vegetables brought to them. And then they can prepare those according to their kosher standards. And then, instead of having anything to do with the wine, they are just going to drink water. So they're going to have a very basic vegetarian, water-only diet for 10 days. Verse 13, then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So check us out after 10 days. See how we compare to these other guys. Now, the other guys that he's referencing are other Judeans, other people brought from Judea, but probably other young men being brought from other places around the Middle East that Nebuchadnezzar has conquered, and he wants representatives from those places in his administration. So it's a wide variety that they're going to be tested against. So this seemed reasonable, and he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the guy checked it and went, wow, you guys look healthier. You've got better flesh tone. You've got better color to yourself. You've got this positive, healthy glow to you. So you're right. This diet does seem to be a better diet than what the king is eating. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. So he allowed them to do this diet, this restricted diet, for the rest of the testing time period. Now, verse 17 is where we're going to end with this story. And we'll have to let the rest of the 3 years pass by. As for these four youths, so Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, that's their new names that we know them so well by. They were given by God learning and skill in all wisdom and literature. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. So God tapped these four young men, these four teenagers, and gave them supernatural assistance in the training program. So they picked up the required new languages, because it wouldn't have just been the language of the Babylonians. They would have had to learn the language of the other areas nearby. And they have to learn the history, and they have to learn the customs and the dress and the proper protocols at court, everything that's going to be necessary for them to function inside the administration. And so Daniel and his three godly companions excel in the program. And we're going to leave that program for now, and we're going to go to something that was going on back in Judea at this same time. I want you to turn to Jeremiah chapter 25. And it's important for you to connect this passage with Daniel. Because even though Daniel has now been moved as a young man to Babylon, when he becomes a significant member of the Babylonian administration, he will use that power to get a hold of Jeremiah's writings. And he will study the writings of the prophet right up into his old age. And one passage in particular that he talks to God about is this one right here. Jeremiah chapter 25. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, That was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. So that means that Jeremiah got this prophecy shortly after Nebuchadnezzar became king and Daniel and his friends were taken away to Babylon. Verse 2, which Jeremiah the prophet spoke to all the people of Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Verse 3, for 23 years, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, to this day, the word of he who is has come to me, and I've spoken persistently to you, but you've not listened. So this is one of the places we find out that Jeremiah has been at this ministry for 23 years. Josiah was still alive when he started it. And I told you at the time that I thought that Josiah and Jeremiah may have been roughly right around the same age. And so that means, by my estimation, that Jeremiah must be in his 40s now. But he is frustrated and he lets them know it. I've been talking and talking and talking to you from God and you won't listen. Verse 4, you have neither listened nor inclined your ear to hear, although he who is persistently sent to you all his servants, the prophets, saying, turn now, every one of you, from his evil way and evil deeds, and dwell upon the land that he who is has given to you and your fathers from of old and forever. So the message has been, repent so that you can stay in the promised land. Verse 6, do not go after other gods to serve and worship them or provoke me to anger with the work of your hands. And then I will declare, I will do you no harm. And yet you've not listened to me, declares he who is, that you might provoke me to anger with the work of your hands to your own harm. Come back tomorrow and we'll continue with Jeremiah's prophecy.